The following podcast is not relating to my teachings and work at Del Cid Medical Center and is for entertainment purposes only. All right, everyone. Welcome to the first inaugural Life of Flow Casecast. So explain what we did, Miguel.
Well, this time around, Lucas was nice enough to come down to Houston. I love going to Austin, but we were able to piecemeal together. Shout out to Allie, our producer. Shout out to Brett Woolley, and who gave us more assistance. You were calling somebody on the phone too.
Oh, Cesar, our editor.
Our editor, yeah. For all their assistance in trying to get this together. But anyway, we did it. Well, here's the deal. When we started doing it, I have all the capabilities in the office-based lab to actually do live cases. And it was actually Woolsey's idea that what if we just project a case and make it into a pot? Mm-hmm. And honestly, we just thought about it a little bit. We went back to the patient. I had a conversation, got consent. It was a case to be recorded and edited, obviously for safety purposes and for HIPAA compliance. But we thought that there could be a very interesting model in the sense that we would invite you to not just listen to it. Of course, it'd probably be better if you view it. So it'd be more of a YouTube, X, or LinkedIn.
Spotify has video too.
Spotify does too. Apple probably does too, no?
I don't think so.
Okay. And so the idea is, for now, it was Lucas and I going over a case and discussing the case. But it was like no stress. It's not live. It's much more predictable, and we have the capacity to edit in things that we think are important. Mm-hmm. We can post process information in afterwards. We can do call outs. We can add, we can add even some information on the techniques or the tools. We can add some data slides. There's just a lot of things that we can do with this. And so we gave it a shot, and we're actually really happy.
Yeah, it was so fun.
It was cool. And It was an interesting case, and we'll dive into the specifics of the case. But it was on All at Hope, ambulatory, outpatient, and I would say with great technical success.
Yeah, it was good, and we're gonna keep doing it.
I think we should. I think it's a very interesting model. So hopefully, you guys will enjoy it. Make sure you have a TV or phone next to you, and let us know later what you thought about the case.
Okay, vamos.
Vamos.
Two vascular surgeons walk into a bar and come out with a podcast. We are talking everything vascular and not. Welcome to the Life of Flow podcast.
All right, guys, as you heard us on the top of the program, this is a little bit of a different thing for us. So Casecast for you by LOF, Life of Flow. And let's just jump into it. This is a 68-year-old female that has been referred to me, actually self-referred to me, for pretty bad right lower extremity rest pain. She has undergone multiple procedures in the last, over a span of about 10 years or so. And I guess either the physicians over there are just tired of her, or they're just not being mindful about all the details on the workup, but I think that she had some obvious options here, and she was told that she essentially had to work it out with cilostazol. And also,
walk it off.
And also did some extensive workup for her potential back issues, but that was all minimal and certainly not something that would explain why there was severe rest pain and very life-limiting claudication. I'll show you here. Essentially, this patient has an aorta with some calcification on the top, but then you start seeing a graft coming in. She had an aorta bifemoral bypass. You see...
End-to-end, right?
It looks like it's end-to-end.
Yeah.
When you look at the back there, you can notice the stents. The old iliac stents that are obviously out of the circuit now and collapsed and all buggered up.
Yep.
Limbs of the aorta bifem, though, they look pretty good in an appropriate surgical and anatomical place. And then focus on the right. This is where she was having problems. This aorta bifemoral, by the way, connects to a common femoral that has been also patched. So there's a patch over the common femoral, and then there's also a femoral popliteal graft, which is also occluded. So there is an aorta bifem, there is a right common femoral inarterectomy with patch, and there is a fem pop that's occluded on the right. And the right is where the symptoms are. So as you walk down the right, you start seeing what seems to be the anastomosis. And then you essentially see the lumen disappear. You see a very trickle area of contrast. And then immediately after that, you see a larger area, a wider area, which right there is measuring about 11 millimeters. And I'm guessing this is the patch.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a profunda, which seems to be doing well. And then you start seeing here at, you know, at 1 or 2 o'clock, that common femoral bypass that, femoral popliteal bypass that is.
Mm-hmm. Also,
right.
Was that a fem above knee or a fem below knee?
Keep going, and we'll figure it out here together.
Below.
And below, yeah.
Yeah.
You see this relatively poor reconstitution, huh?
There's an AT, yeah?
There's an AT.
Tippy trunk is diseased.
Mm-hmm. And that's about as far down as it goes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, obviously not easy, of course, right? I mean, I don't...
How many times did they go into this groin? Do you know?
So by her accounts, 3, and at some point, one of those was complicated by some post-operative stuff.
Mm.
So, right, I mean, if you think about it, one is the aorta bifem, one is the patch, which probably was the last, and then one was the fempop. So that at least accounts for 3 times. And then
the patch.
The patch could have been, you know, I.
This could be the bypass too.
Please say how you know. Remember how I would always be like, you know, you as a vascular surgeon, half if not more of your job is piecing together everything that had happened before.
Yeah,
because it's so important for you to know what all happened, and in order to provide something that makes sense for the patient and for you as a surgeon, right? You don't want to get in trouble, but
yeah,
it's really interesting because, you know, over a span of 15 years, I don't blame patients for not remembering. And
no. Yeah, I don't remember what happened last week.
Yeah, half of the time they're in the hospital, they're under a bunch of medications, maybe they had an ICU stay, right? It's hard for them. And it's not easy for us to just pop in and be like, okay, well, what happened 10 years ago in a different state or in a different hospital? I mean, sometimes across the street here in Houston, and there's no access to the information. It's unclear what happened. So part of your work as a vascular interventionalist is really to be a detective and try to piece together the story. And by imaging alone, here's, you know, what I say is, okay, well, I see an aorta bifem that's open. I see that there's something happening here in this right groin. I also see the patch, and I do see this large inflammatory tissue. You see that whole area on top of the...
Yeah, the scar tissue, for sure.
Like that doesn't look like an easy area to get into. And it's healed on the outside with the story that she had some ongoing complications. It certainly wouldn't be what I would be excited about doing.
Do we know when she had the last procedure?
The last surgery?
Yeah.
I want to say 2-3 years ago.
Okay.
And obviously she's allergic to surgeries at this point. But
yeah.
But anyway, let me show you also, I think this coronal is very telling. Look at that.
So yeah,
look
at
that. I'll go to the top. Let's focus on the graft. You see the graft does, to your point, look like a end-to-end.
Yeah.
Focus on the right limb. It's coming nice, and I'm actually rather surprised it hasn't occluded.
Yeah.
that. That's essentially what seems to be the connection between the aorta limb on the right and the common femoral, or if they did a patch, you know, the limb to a patch.
That's probably the hood of it, I would imagine.
Yeah, but
where the hood meets the patch,
right? And then here you can also see the offtake of the fempop ringed graft there that's occluded, and you see that the profunda is nice and patent.
Can you do a sagittal just to see where it kind of comes on top?
We can. Let's see.
That's a knee.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. That one.
I thought that's the one that I picked.
Yeah, maybe.
Is he? Yeah, but that's the knee.
Yeah. What about the three below that one?
Pretty, like whatever you look at, it's not pretty, right?
Yeah.
Look at this chunk of stuff.
Chunk of calcium.
No.
What about the sixth? Go down. It's, one more. Look at that one.
This guy? Let's see.
No. What's going on? How about, I guess the third, that one.
It's
a knee. Fuck.
Then this is just axial late.
Okay, I guess we won't see it.
I mean, let me see. Maybe I could do an NPR of this. See if oros.
There you go.
Yeah, the big problem with this is...
Yeah, can you change the which one?
Doing this remote, I'm not in front of the pack, so it limits my capacity, but let me see. See, like, I can't operate the mouse from here remotely.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
See.
Can you zoom in?
No.
No. Okay.
Which is what you get, Lucas, okay?
That's fine.
See, you can make a little something. Right there, to your point. Give me a second. Oh, boy.
Yeah, go. I think you're going to go down a little bit.
Not doing anything. It's all doing it on its own. Lost control.
This is, yeah, all right. Let's move along. All right, so can you tell, do you think you can tell what's in that lesion? What's it composed of by the business CAT scan?
I think so. I mean, based on the CAT scan, it doesn't look like there is anything calcified, right? It just looks chunky.
So it's either new endomorphoplasia plus minus clot.
Correct. I mean, you can see it here, right? It does not look as if though it is anything other than some soft homogeneous material. And I'm sure on IVUS I'll be able to showcase that or so.
So going in, you think you're gonna do what? Laser versus Rotarex versus what?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I would elect any device. First of all, is you know, I think AXIS is gonna be a good topic of discussion, which I don't remember if we did live. I think we did.
We did. We went into it.
Well, we'll just kind of go over it real quick here. But, you know, you can do radial to peripheral, but that limits you on some of the device says that you may use.
She seems like a short lady, though.
She does. I think you could do a common femoral ipsilateral stick, but that's going through a patch. And yes, you can do it, but it's really sometimes very difficult to get
this tight. Yeah, it's going to be tight. What you got, like, you may have 2 centimeters, but, and that's what you always, like, we always discuss in training that you need, like, well, at least for antegrade access, you need, if you're going to stick the common femoral, you need 2 centimeters of
minimum.
Yeah. So you may have that there.
You may. It's going to be tight. Yeah, it's just technically challenging to get through a patch. Because let's say that you, I mean, you can, you're definitely going to be able to get a needle in it, okay? And you could get a wire. But then you have to get a sheath that will really go through. But then you would have to navigate the lesion first to be able to put a stiffer wire to get through the patch. I just think it's a little bit of a nightmare. I think you have to think out of the box and think of other options here.
What do you think about this concept of damaging or like your outflow? I get this a lot from some of my partners when I discuss retrograde access. They're like, oh, what about the concern of damaging your outflow? You know, if you put a sheath, I could see that. Maybe. Here, you know, there's the option of sticking the profunda, which would be your outflow. Is that something you worry about? Or
I think that if you're very mindful about how you're going to do hemostasis, and your ultrasound skills are up to, you know, good quality, I don't find any problems. Of course, I would never do this as a primary thing, but I have had patients where profunda sticks are the only way I can go and analyze a common femoral occlusion on somebody that's already had, you know, that has very limited options. So in the end, I just make sure that I put like a Minx device or a Vascade device and that I use ultrasound to make sure that I close it. Now you've talked me into using the Kelt, and I think that could also be an option down there.
I would think more like a Minx or something like that for some, reason.
I wouldn't say it's impossible. Just say here you have another option, which is I think what we elected to do, which is you have a very easy landing, which is the femoral popliteal graft, which is occluded. But guess what? It's occluded, but it's connected to the common femoral patch.
Yeah, that's a freebie.
And so here you have a very nice way to A, get in, B, earn yourself the centimeters you need, and C, quite frankly, have very little trouble with hemostasis, because at the end of the case, all you do is pull the sheath out and that graft is occluded. So chances are is it's not going to ooze at all. And so...
Yeah, or you can just put a closure device just for good measure and have very little worry.
You want to, yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's what we elected to do. And so we'll be able to show you that here in a minute. And we used a occluded graft as our axis. We were able to maneuver ourselves into the common femoral that was patent. We were able to then maneuver retrogradely into that limb of the graft. And then, what we did, what steps we took, you'll see as we walk you through the case. So I hope that you guys can enjoy it. Do you think it's a good time to go and let them see it, Lucas?
Yeah, well, we have that preoperative ultrasound. Should we discuss at the end or no?
Yeah, let's do that. So let's go to the case. And then what we'll show at the end, if you stick around, is the ultrasounds pre and the ultrasound post that she just had not too long ago after the procedure was successfully done. Okay.
All right. Perfect. Boom. Let's go.
Nice.
Okay. All right, Mego. Welcome to our first not live case. This is not going to be live, but podcast case. I don't know if there's been a podcast angiogram ever in the history of angiograms.
I don't know. Well, it's great to be here. We have a very interesting case today. I have a female here with a past complex medical history of PAD, multi-level disease, who has undergone already multiple procedures, including endovascular iliac interventions that have failed, followed by an aorta bifemoral bypass that is still patent, endarterectomy of the right common femoral at the time of the bypass, and also a femoral popliteal bypass on the right side. She was referred at this point with pretty bad rest pain, and our intentions when we saw her was to try to further understand what was going on. On the duplex, we could see monophasic waveforms in the common femoral patch and profunda. The SFA is occluded, the fempop bypass is occluded, but the aorta bifemoral is open, and it seems to have a very tight stenosis. I know that we're probably going to review this ahead of time
And so it'll be interesting. We carry the conversation from the standpoint that we've already analyzed that CTA. And so really the questions at this point are going to be surrounding access, interventional tools, imaging, and how we're going to essentially provide personalized care at this point. Your thoughts, I'm going to get out of the range of the camera and I'm going to start looking at the ultrasound here. So I'll switch you to the extravascular ultrasound for a quick view. But before we kind of get going, you saw the CTA complex case.
Yeah, complex case.
Without a doubt. What's your thoughts here as you're trying to move over this?
Basically, I'm thinking that this is new entomal hyperplasia. So for the viewers that are listening, for the listeners that are not looking at the video, basically at the limb, at kind of the mid, if you can imagine what the arteriotomy for the aortic bifemoral bypass anastomosis looks like, right in the middle of the arteriotomy, there seems to be a significant amount of neoentomal hyperplasia. And you have a clear division of proximal part of the actual arteriotomy from the distal part. And in the middle, there's a chunk of neoentomal hyperplasia. And distal to that lesion, you have your profunda, and you had what looks like an occluded fempop bypass limb distal to that. So I think at this point, my strategy would be to get the profunda in line, and that's the only thing I would strive for this procedure.
So despite the fact that there's multi-level disease, your thoughts on this particular case are that we need to focus on getting the profunda back in line.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. I'm here doing a...
Do you want to describe what you're seeing in ultrasound?
Yeah, so I guess this is just a transversal view right at the groin level.
Mm-hmm.
On the right-hand side, you see the common femoral vein. On the left-hand side, you see what seems to be the patch anterorectomy.
Yeah.
And I'm going further down. This is an interesting image because as we go further down, it seems like that fempop bypass comes off that anterorectomy patch. You see how it at maybe like at 2 o'clock?
Yeah.
And that fempop bypass we know is occluded already. But that's an interesting source of potential access, even if it's occluded, because if it does connect in there, we may have a path straight into the common femoral. The other thing that we can notice is that the profunda goes here lateral. You can see that pulsatile profunda, so it is open.
Yeah.
And I can show you that here in a longitudinal view, so if I want to kind of highlight...
That's a nice view.
Yeah, let me try to get you a better view of the... So that's the patched common femoral, right? And here is the profunda, beautiful view to the profunda down below. And that we know is open, it's nice and pulsatile. Yeah. And then I'm actually going to move into the bypass. You see how if I just go a little bit more medial, then I'm going to see the bypass, which again seems to go straight into the patch. And this could potentially be a source of access, right, as we're trying to deal with this. Now, I'm going to try to see if I can catch a good view of this. And it seems like if I was a betting man, I think that's the aortic bifemoral anastomosis right there. AJ, would you give me a little bit more gain just to see if we can...
I haven't seen the lesion delineated.
The lesion is right at the axis. A little bit less. That was enough on the first turn. Yeah. Go ahead and give me color, buddy. We should see some significant aliasing here. Yeah, here.
Yeah.
I think it's that.
You think it's that right there?
Right there. Look, it's that's just literally 1 millimeter of anything there. That's where it comes in.
Can you measure the distance from the bypass anastomosis to that lesion? To see how much space you have to
from
work
the
with.
The bypass anastomosis, it is right at the anastomosis.
No, from the aorta bifem, you mean? From the fempop.
Oh. So on my screen, I've got, the screen is approximately 2.5 centimeters wide.
Yeah, so you have more than 2 centimeters, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and I like here's four. The bypass, so I would say...
I like 4 centimeters.
Yeah, at least. And here you can see how the bypass is occluded. There's just a little nub in there.
Yeah.
And then the profunda does have flow, right? Yeah. You can see it very well here. See how the profunda's got flow there?
Yeah, so I think access to the bypass is a no-brainer, huh?
I mean, we could just access into the patch, right?
But you would have a small amount of work, and you know, and if you have it, you can have an access site complication, you know.
Well, I think you would also consider that the fibrotic tissue in and around it in our direct makes it so hard sometimes to get anything in and out.
Yeah.
But I think it's not a bad idea, to be honest, Luke, because I don't know that dealing with the potential problems that this bypass could be, but we could give it a shot. I don't know if it should be.
The bypass will give you less potential problems because nothing's going to bleed, right? You're going to access it like 2 centimeters distal from...
Yeah, and I could probably put my sheath fairly inside.
Yeah.
So do we have a 5 precision? That's the other thing. I think that we just... Yes, okay. Get me a 5 precision. The other thing that I'm going to ask you guys is give me a V18 control wire, because a short one if you have it, because then if I get that needle in... Yeah. The wire of the sheath may not be strong enough to cross that CTO.
Can you explain for those who don't know why you're choosing the V18?
Yeah. So the V18 control wire is an O18 wire that's got a very nice hydrophilic tip. And I essentially can get the needle into the CTO. Go ahead and take the color away, AJ, if you don't mind. I can get into the CTO of the bypass or occluded bypass, and I... probably even under ultrasound can traverse this bypass occlusion. The wire of the sheaths tend to be much less rigorous than the wires of than a wire like the V18 control wire. Like, it doesn't have enough support to do this sort of maneuver. So anytime I'm doing something that has complicated access, that the moment I put the needle, there's some treacherous things either ahead or right at, I'm always going to have a wire that gives me much more versatility. So
the V18 has, I think, only 3 centimeters of the hydrophilic segment that really provides you no support to drive a catheter or a sheath. And then so it's really short. Usually it's like double the size on other wires. So if you have a place where you don't have much...
That's
okay. If you're accessing at a place where you don't have much purchase to have support, then a V18 wire will give you more support than, say...
And you know what's nice, Lucas, is it'll curl. The hydrophilic tip will curl very quickly.
Yeah.
And then you're into the most supported segment of the wire.
Exactly. So
it's a really nice...
The bad thing is kind of like once it does that, I find it difficult to reshape into its normal size to keep using.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a one-and-done kind of a deal.
All right. So what you see here is the needle...
Yeah, it's a beautiful
going thing. Into the occluded bypass. I already put a little lidocaine on it. I felt a little pop, and you could see the tip of the needle there. Are you able to see that?
Yeah, beautiful.
I'm getting no backflow, of course, as expected, right? And now I'm going to see, I'll give it like a little bit of a bend here and try to see if I can see the wire under ultrasound traversing here, if at all possible.
Yeah, you can see it there. Nice.
Yeah, so you see that wire is already... trying to do a little bit of...
Wants to go where it wants to go.
...of crossing. It's probably just curling up, like we said. Look at that.
Yeah. Let's give it a little push.
And so we may give it a little push. So I'm going to go ahead and change to X-ray, if you don't mind, AJ. Give me the pedal, please. So, by the way, in this room today, I've got a phenomenal team of people. I've got Janet, who is our wonderful director of venous interventions. And also now, wonderful scrub tech and circulator. We've got AJ, the nurse practitioner, who's my lifesaver in many ways. And Daniela, who's actually doing a rotation from Mexico. So she's here with us for a few days. And she's been amazing. Much better than all the trainees I've had. Going back to Lucas. You know, Lucas was my trainee. You were far better than him, by the way. Can you let it go there so I can move it this way? Okay, let me get you back into the image here, guys.
Yeah. this. So you can see all the clips. Yeah.
Go ahead and make it where it's a little faster. Remember that stuff that we do, 2K? Whatever you normally do to make it a little bit better. Now you see how slow it is? And then column 8, if you don't mind. All right, so obviously this looks like a recipe for disaster, right?
Yeah, you see clips all the way laterally.
Whenever you press flu on, this is what you see. You got to just be careful, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let me go ahead and mag up a little bit here. It's much better. And I'm going to try to keep my hands away from this, but I'm going to try to just see what this wire wants to do.
So nicely.
See, I just kind of give it a little bit of a flip. And maybe that's outside. What would you think? Maybe,
I think that's curling around probably some like harder neontomorphoplasia at the ostium of the. It seems. Yeah.
Oh, ooh, that looks like that. Some lumina.
There you go.
What was that? Look at that. Look
magic
at that.
Magic hands. Magic hands, everyone.
I don't know, man.
All right.
I think so that.
Can you describe can you describe it for the people who are listening, like what you were seeing and what you were feeling?
Yeah, so I was just seeing the wire kind of follow the lead, but then it was kind of twirling. So what we did is very soft torque of the wire. I backed up the wire and I just kind of softly twirled it. And it just, you know, it just kind of tends to do what we want it to do, right? So
the wire, instead of moving.
So don't push, right? Listen to the wire. I always say the wire speaks to you, and you got to listen to it because the wire will give you a lot of feedback. And this is one of the advantages of, you know, I respect anybody from industry that gives you a new wire, but sometimes a new wire is never going to be a better option because you just know your wires, you know? Yeah. It's kind of like underwear.
You remember what Mariano Palena said about wires once?
No,
what was it? Like VT? I don't know, but I'm going to say it here. Yeah. But yeah, one is the one you know. There's a fancy one that's all like, you know, has all the excitement of new things. But man, that trusty one.
That that's like wife wire? Oh my God. Yeah.
Okay. And one is another type of wire.
You know what I want to do, guys? Before I make a bigger hole, can I get a 65 018 Navicross, if you don't mind? So before I actually put a bigger sheath into this,
so I want to double. Why are you doing a Navicross? If you feel like the wire is moving freely and you feel like it's, why not just go with like a micropuncture sheath that has a 018 dilator?
I have a micropuncture sheath. I'm just considering I can probably already cross this whole thing. Let me go back. AJ, can you go back to ultrasound? I think this will be very telling. Let me know, AJ. Confirm. Let me just get AJ. You doing okay, sweetie?
Yeah.
Huh? Okay, everything's going well, okay? Okay, so that's the wire. You can see it on going through the graft. And it looks like we're luminal in this whole segment.
Nice view.
And it just goes immediately in.
Intraluminal.
Right?
They're in the patch.
Mm-hmm.
Then the thing is, are you going into the native?
Actually, I'm already crossed.
You're crossed it. Yeah, so you don't need that.
I'm going to torque this wire a little bit, but I think I'm already in.
Just drive it into the limb.
Right?
Yeah.
Yep, I think that I am. So I'm going to put a microcatheter and just confirm.
For those listening, we just did a longitudinal view of the of the artery, the patch, and the limb, and then we saw the wire going into the limb in that longitudinal ultrasound view. And then that's clearly going, now the wire is clearly pushed into the irritable bifemoral bypass limb. So I would be 99% sure.
You would be very confident at this point to put a sheath,
100%.
Okay, I'm going to just do a little safety step here, which is I'm going to do a micro step before that.
So can you talk about your approach being in the OBL versus being in the hospital? Because in the hospital, I feel a level of confidence that, okay.
Yeah. So this is what I'm doing. This is part of this exactly thing that you're saying, is you're saying, Miguel, you know, I think that you're good. It looks good. It feels good. But you know what? Putting a sheath is already a compromise that we're probably going to move on to do something.
Yeah.
And this is just this kind of intermediate step. I'm putting a micro catheter. It's a braided catheter that'll go through. It went through like butter. It didn't give me that much trouble. And I'm going to just essentially park it right here.
Yeah.
You can actually see the iliac old stents here.
Where you're parking it?
I'm parking it in the right limb of the aortobifemoral bypass graft, essentially.
Okay.
So let me, I'm getting some good blood return, and now I'm going to give you a digital subtraction. And theoretically, that should be a patent bypass. Let me see if I can
get an
image without.
Yep. So now.
And actually, right there in that image, you can see the problem, right?
Yeah.
Look at the bottom. Look at that massive little area there.
So we see the aortic femoral bypass limb. We see right at the femoral head an area of 90% stenosis, and then a wide open patch distal to that.
Yep.
All right. So now what to do?
I'm much more relaxed. I'm probably going to IVUS this because I think that we need to understand morphology of the plaque. Situational placement of the patch, consider all your, you know, and this, and funny enough, when I was going into this, discussing here with our local visiting fellow, it was, you know, what's your plan? She's like, okay, well, I think we should do this. All right, well, what's plan B? What's plan C and D? So I told her, essentially, I want to try from the femoral popliteal graft that's occluded. If that's not going to work, I'm going to go straight into the patch. If that's not going to work, I'm potentially going to consider the profunda. If that's not going to work, I'm going to go up and over from the left. But of course, with an aorta bifemoral, that's very difficult to do that up and over. But it's imperative that when you're looking at these cases, you're always thinking as you're going into the case, you have six plans, right? Yeah. I mean, it's chess. And that's one thing that I always give people shit for, is why is it that with peripherals, people go through a very limited plan processing, right? But people take hours to analyze an EVAR and size it and find what axis. You should probably do the same with your peripherals, right? Especially on complex cases.
Especially
like
something like this. I mean,
And
it says, you know, 10 centimeter SFA lesion. I don't know if I would need to have like four plans for it. Probably one A and B probably be more than enough. But for this, you need like, six.
Okay, what I'm going to do now here is I'm going to try to go very, very soft. I don't want to push any material from this graft in. So I'm trying to just essentially make my way through the occluded CTO. Okay, can you give me a 6 precision, please? And then the other thing is this 5-1 went very smoothly, so I'm going to go ahead and do the same for a 6. Why a 6? Because I think that there's a high chance that we may have to stent or consider stenting this. Obviously, if we think it's ISR, let's discuss what are your thoughts on different tools to debulk this lesion.
I mean, I think I would probably laser would be my first choice, given safety profile mostly. As far as efficacy.
Everything good?
And we're then...
Everything's looking great, okay?
And then after that, probably I would think about using Rotarex. But man, I don't know if I feel comfortable rotating something at 4,000 RPMs in my office-based lab inside a human being.
We do that on a daily basis.
I know people do that, but just the concept of it, just like, you know.
Let's go ahead and do what's your weight? 7 kilos. Let's go ahead and do 7,000 units of heparin, please.
So, if I had an OBL, I would be using laser principally.
Well,
because
we'll make you happy because we have both technologies available to us.
Do you think about that? Especially like in like SFAs and stuff like that. If you look, I did a review
go ahead
once.
And do 10,000, AJ.
And I think laser had the least amount of distal embolization of any atherectomy device in the femorals. Is that something you consider, or do you have other things that you weigh more?
I think, honestly, you have to just personalize care, right? I mean, there's not just one good device.
Yeah.
And so creating these contracts for OBLs with 90% tier utilization is just... abusive for a company, and I think a doctor would be dumb to agree to that.
Yeah.
You have to have something good for calcium. You have to have something good for mechanical thrombectomy. You have so mm-hmm. there's just all these things, and then you decide, right? I mean, you decide based on experience. You decide based on imaging. You ideally have a plan ahead of the case. Look at that.
Yeah. There's nice, huh? So now we're seeing the distal end of the patch, the profunda is wide open.
Correct.
It's just that I wonder how that lesion there developed.
Oh,
it's weird. It's a weird spot, huh? It's like right in the middle seems of the irritable bifurcated anastomosis.
It could have been that they did a very, very small anastomosis.
Mm.
Who knows? You know? But, I mean, that's the Achilles tendon of bypasses, right? Those anastomoses tend to create a lot of intimal hyperplasia.
Yeah. Well, I think...
So can I have a command ES, y'all? Please? I'm going to change my O18 access wire for a longer O14 wire. And through that, I'm going to get an IVUS catheter. I'm going to analyze the inside of that. I'm going to try to get a little bit of anatomy, and then we can be ready to treat as needed.
Yeah. So I think I've been describing this incorrectly. So there's a patch, and then on top of the patch, there's the aortic bifemoral bypass limit.
Yes, that's what I think.
And then
there's an endarterectomy.
Oh, okay.
And there's this the aortic bifemoral bypass. Let me see if I can maybe. I just need to get enough lateral projection here for you to be able to see that better.
Yeah. The stenosis is at the.
At the anastomosis between the right limb of the aorta bifemoral and the patch.
Yeah, but at the apex of it. At the distal apex of what the limb would be. Right?
See? Now you can see it really well, huh?
Yeah.
Maybe, who knows, maybe it's that anastomosis, because I don't know, I was unclear about the temporary nature of this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the aorta bifemoral came first. And then the fempop with an endarterectomy. And what I'm thinking is that they didn't go high enough, because it would have been interesting to consider patching all the way into the graft.
Limb. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So you see they left that little tiny itsy-bitsy thing, and that's generating the biggest problem. You know, that's what I think is happening.
Maybe, yeah.
And it's one of those little tiny end to side where they didn't really bevel it into the patch. Because you could have done different things, right? You could have done you could have thrown a little bridge from the limb to the patch.
Yeah.
You could have just cut it all the way up.
That's
tricky
patch.
Because you have to cut into that and expose that. I mean, I understand where there was some hesitation to do a little bit more, but clearly this is what's become the hiccup for him, right?
Yeah.
I mean, for this situation. All right, let me float this wire, this catheter, and I'm going to go ahead and change this for an O14 wire. That V18 control wire, I think, did wonders, as we expected it to.
Yeah.
It helped us to get access, it helped us to cannulate, it helped us to get sheaths in. It just, did precisely what we needed it to do, huh?
Yeah, I just wish they made a more resilient tip to it.
I think the Command ES-18 is probably a good bet for that particular ask.
Yeah, but it's, I don't know, price point, I guess, would be an issue. If you're cost conscious, you know.
Oh, trust me, I am.
I know.
I'm sorry, the microphone is kind of rubbing on my beard. Just kind of pull the lead back so that the microphone, every time I move my face, I'm like rubbing the microphone and sounds scratch. No, don't put it back because it'll be away from my mouth and they can't hear me. Can you hear me there, Lucas?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
Beard problems.
Yeah, I'm having beard problems. Hairy man problems.
Yeah.
Okay, can I get an O14 IVUS catheter, y'all? Is there a 2.0 catheter?
So I'm sure you're already thinking what laser catheter you're going to use. What do you have in your mind?
I think that what I have available in my cath lab here for this particular thing would be a Jetstream, but it would require a 7-French sheath, and I already have a 6.
Mm-hmm.
B, Rotarex,
which mm-hmm. I would feel comfortable doing.
Yeah.
And see a laser. Mm-hmm. But to your point, you know, those out of those two, I think whatever's actually truly, both Rotarex and laser are indicated for ISR, specifically for stents. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you can extrapolate that to anastomosis.
Yeah.
And then I think that we need to consider things like scoring balloons, cutting balloons.
I think cutting balloon for sure.
And I have a couple here. They're expensive.
Yeah. What?
Yeah, they're not cheap.
I know you, I don't think you have directional atherectomy, but...
I don't have a turbo hawk, but I think it would be a great option because I could essentially cut in the direction that I would like.
Yeah, that's what right? I would in an ideal world.
If you had everything, that's what you would consider.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's not a bad idea because you can make some pretty clear cuts into the right direction, right?
Yeah. The only thing about that would be if you're worried about embolization, direction of flow would be towards your profunda. So... You wouldn't be able to, obviously a filter in the wrong direction doesn't help you. So right. That would be a concern. If you wanna account for that, then you would have to go up and over, snare this wire, and then bring the hog from the other side and then drop a filter.
That sounds like a lot.
It sounds like a lot, I know.
AJ, you wanna show these fine people the ibis? Let me switch you over, guys, so you can see what we're seeing. Okay. Adjust that image. We're gonna adjust that image. Give you the widest view. Go to 20 millimeters. Yeah, there you go. So this is a 014 Phillips IVUS catheter. And what I'm gonna do here is I'm gonna just very slowly. This is the iliac limb, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I keep going up, you're gonna see me find like the aorta, right there, right?
Okay.
So that's the main body of the aorta bifemoral bypass, right?
Yeah.
You see the bifurcation, you see at 6 o'clock the other contralateral limb.
Yeah.
Now I'm going down the right iliac limb.
Mm-hmm. It's all clean. That everything looks clean. Wide open.
Yeah, clean as a whistle, no problem there. You do see a little stagnation of blood. It's not typical that you're able to see that much blood, and you start seeing it more towards the end probably where a lot of that blood is starting to pool.
Okay. I never considered that, like,
yeah, it'll paying attention more to of an echogenic image. The more stasis there is, the more echogenic. Okay.
Okay. That's a beautiful
and
image.
And here's
right
where
there.
I think we're getting into the critical part, where it's...
Go back.
Look at that.
Yeah, look at that.
Look at that.
Yeah.
You know what? It almost makes me feel like it's
concentric,
native artery.
It looks concentric.
I think
concentric.
That's a common femoral. See, I think that's all common femoral. And then the anastomosis.
Okay.
But the fact that it's all homogeneous makes me think that it could be a clot, layered clot or ISR.
Yeah.
Right? Janet, can you store that for me, please? Go ahead and record.
So,
all right, this is the patch. I'm going higher up. Patch. Yeah. It seems to be common femoral with a lot of material. Look at how the lumen becomes.
There's calcium there.
Very small. The entire lumen. There's some calcification at 7, 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
And then you start seeing the hood of the graft between.
And there you're
and
open.
Four.
Yeah.
And then you have the graft, right?
Yeah.
Now stop there, Janet. Go ahead and give me dots on the graft. Move it. Move it down. No, you got to move the thing down to the graft, all the way down. Mm-hmm. All the way down.
All right, so let's talk about atherectomy selection with that image.
Give me dots here real quick. That'll help me understand what the diameter of this graft is. I bet you it's an 8 millimeter
eight,
one.
Yeah. 8.3.
There you go. So probably an 8, 16 by 8.
Mm-hmm.
And go live again, store, and live. And let's look at what the diameter of this common terminal. Let's go there. Let's try to do that. Go ahead and freeze. And do dots. Try to follow the calcium. It's a little weirder. Yep. A little bit less. There you go. Maybe, keep going. Try to follow the calcium. Yeah, keep going. Yep.
I'll go there. That's it. Yep. So done. Maybe. A little further out. No, further out. There you go. See, it's 8 and 9 to 10. So I think if we could get it to an 8, we'd be all very happy. That's probably our end diameter. If we can get this lesion to look like an 8.
But you don't think that's her native size?
I think so.
She's a small female. You're saying she has a 10 millimeter common femoral?
Well, it's a common femoral that's been cut in the anterior wall for an anastomosis, so it kind of widens up a little bit, right?
Okay. So you think that's in at patch level?
It's hard to tell, Lucas.
It's hard to tell,
but
yeah.
I think my hunch is it's right above the patch into the native. That's my hunch. Yeah.
I would try to get it to 6 max.
You wouldn't go past...
No.
Past 6?
No.
All right. Well, let's see. Let's start with a 6 for sure.
She's a small female. Yeah.
All right. We're going to go with a 2-0. 2-0 laser, and we're going to give it a few passes there.
What are your options on the laser?
I usually will start probably at 40-40, like 45-45, go up to 60-60. Maybe you can go the intensity up to an 80 if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try to get a nice view here and a working image. I want to make sure that I'm far away from the sheath so I don't burn it. Yeah. So see, it's as long as I stay above that little surgical clip,
mm-hmm.
I'm far enough away
from... I'm still seeing the IVUS. Can you go to the...
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
AJ, okay. Can you go back to the angiogram? So that's our working image right there. AJ is...
There you go. That's a nice view.
You know, we call AJ Stevie Wonder here.
I want to know
when
why.
When it comes to taking IVs,
he's
our best IV person. Stevie Wonder in the house.
Man.
I wonder where the vein is. My pleasure. You have this image right on your screen.
Yeah, I have it.
You can see the nice 8-millimeter iliac branch. The graft limb. Yeah. Then remember, you don't prep it. Okay, give me a second. So what we're going to do is we're going to calibrate. Go ahead and do me a favor, Danny. Step back to... There you go. Lasers, with the Philips Spectronetic laser, you have to calibrate. Do not see. Please move your eyes away. No puedes ver esto. Nobody see, please. If you are seeing, you need to use glasses. And so the calibration has been complete. Laser is in standby. It looks good. Now you can put some heparinized saline through it if you don't mind.
Yeah.
And we're using a 2.0. Go to 45-45 if you don't mind. I know there's other lasers. What do you think about the Arion laser in this particular situation? What do you like? I know you use it. What do you like about it? What do you not like about it?
I like ease of use, no calibration.
Okay.
And basically, it's effective. So okay. I think they're equally effective. There's an increased ease of use. You know, you have a strong team here that you work with every day. I have travelers that come in and out. And I don't even know when they're starting and ending. So anything that is just like very easy to use, it works for me in kind of making sure that the cases run smoothly. So
you know, I think also it's got an aspiration port, doesn't it?
I don't think it has active aspiration. No, it does have an active aspiration port, but I don't know what the effectiveness of that aspiration port is.
You think it's a very small...
I think it doesn't do absolutely anything, but yeah.
Okay. Well, you're going to hear a little bit of a loud noise. The laser is loud, so you'll hear a little as we're doing it, and the Important thing is keep contrast away. Contrast can be highly volatile in presence of laser. It could actually create a degree of explosion if you may.
That's another thing about the Orion. And, you know, I'm not a laser physicist, but the wavelengths are different. And you don't need to be so mindful of the laser, of the contrast exploding inside the patient. Yeah.
Okay.
Doesn't sound great.
Benny, would you mind stepping on the pedal when I tell you? So I'm just going to say pedal on, pedal off. Go ahead, pedal on. And I'm just going to go very, very slow.
No, is that the one that rotates on itself?
No, that's the turbo power laser.
Yeah, that's more expensive, I imagine.
And we don't have that one here.
Is there an offset to the...
I don't think that there's a true need for the turbo power laser here. Because I think that this is a rather linear area. And I don't think that it would be... Now, if there was more changes in direction or calcification, then that turbo power feature of it twisting left and right in a way and off. Thank you. Go ahead and pull it out.
Do you do a number of passes with laser?
I'll just probably do 2-3 passes first, and then we'll probably go up. I start with a low fluency and repetition rate on the laser. All right, let's just see if there's any marginal improvement here.
Oh, yeah, wow. Look at that.
Jeez.
Boom.
That's pretty damn impressive. That's just with
win for Philips.
45.
I would just let it be, bro.
I would let it be because also at the same time, if you increase, I mean, this could perforate a graft very easily.
I would just
be very cautious about trying to push this. If you've already got some luminal gain, just, you know, this is a win for you. You probably at this point go for a balloon. So let's go for a 6x40 balloon, please. Huh? A jade balloon, 640, yes. Go ahead, pull that guy out. You doing okay, sweetie? I already opened it up with the laser. It looks much better already. Now I'm going to balloon it a little bit, but you're doing real good, okay? Everything's going in the right direction. I'm very happy. Are you happy?
Okay.
And sleepy? Okay, good. Being sleepy is good while you're doing these procedures.
Yeah. That means whoever's doing the sedation's rock star. If I hear the patient snoring, I'm like, oh my God, you're the best.
Good.
You're the best. The sweet sound of snoring.
Unless it's like the sleep apnea snore, then that one's maybe scary and somewhat annoying.
Yeah.
The one that just like rocks the house rocks completely.
The table.
Then the other thing is, you know, your thoughts about needing a scaffold here.
I would avoid a scaffold.
Would you consider primary stenting? Would it be a...
No.
Plus also these sizes are odd, right? I mean, we're talking about an 8mm limb into a patch. I bet you that patch is probably...
That patch is 10, for sure.
10, yeah, easier, 12. And so whatever you put in there is going to be floating. And the only stent that I would be happy with would be a Supera. And you don't have a Supera that would accommodate to this, right? Yeah. The biggest Supera is a 7.5.
Yeah.
I guess you could put a super short, like a 7.5x20 right there.
Yeah, but stack it. Yeah.
It'd still be...
But I would avoid that because, you can come back and do this, like laser DCB a number of times, right? Yeah. And then just, you know, this is a... How many operations has this patient had in the groin? Minimum two, at least?
Well, if you add all the iliac interventions before that, this poor lady's been through a lot.
Yeah, so... The last thing I want to do...
Unfortunately, what we do is we're experts in palliative care.
Yeah. This is a palliative procedure.
There's no one true solution, but you know what? I think that this can give her a significant amount of time on an outpatient basis.
Yeah.
Low effect on her overall cardiovascular health.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, you know, I'm not putting her through anesthesia, induction, or any of these things.
No, this is like a tooth extraction level.
Well, I don't know.
And it's, you know, as far as anesthetics, stress.
Out of all the professors in the world, I would never be a dentist. That's yucks.
or an ENT surgeon.
What's that?
You know, I was disenchanted with ENT the first time as a medical student. I pulled one of those plugs out of somebody's nose.
Yeah.
That was one of the grossest things I've ever done in my life. All right, so this is a 620L. And already I see a little bit of a waist there, but not as bad.
Not much.
You're going to feel a little pressure in your right groin, okay? Let me mag up a little bit more. I just really see the behavior of that lesion. So this is at 4 atmospheres. And really? That's 6 atmospheres.
Nice. So you have basically nominal expansion at 4 atmospheres. Yeah.
Yeah, great. I know you're going to hate this, but I'm really tempted to go with 8. 8J.
Okay.
I know. Why? Dr. Ferrer is freaking out. How about a 740? Would you be okay with a 740? Because I want to put a DCB. So that's just a regular predilation?
Sure. But I would not go past nominal pressure.
Okay, let's do 7 DCV, and we'll push it past nominal a little bit, just for Lucas. Thank you. Yes, please, out slowly. See, I've already offered Danny a job here, but she wants to go back to Mexico City for some weird reason.
They have way better food in Mexico City. Way better food. If it's Mexico City, like, why?
Mexico City, yeah. She lives in La Roma.
Ah, dude. Take me with you, Danny. I'll be your scrub tech. Just pay me in, like,
Let's see how this works.
And lunches at Maximo's. Shout out to Maximo in Mexico City.
Yeah, let's tag them on the show.
Yeah, let's tag them. Maybe they can give us when we go to Hendelat, they give us
a free
lunch or something.
Definitely happening. Then ask.
No.
Ask?
Yeah.
So take this away.
Uh-huh.
And then this is a peel away.
Yeah.
Okay. Bounce.
It seems right, like you so still have a significant waist now there. Huh? I can't see the image I see. What do you feel about that waist? I wouldn't be completely happy with it.
The waist at what level, sorry?
At where the lesion was.
I think, well, there's a couple of things. I mean, there's probably still some material, right? I mean, I don't think that we're going to leave it like clean as a whistle, but
no.
That's why the negative remodeling from a drug-coated balloon is important in these lesions.
Yeah.
Some of those cells are going to probably die in the next few days.
Yeah.
And I do believe that maybe we'll catch a little bit more of that... Of that waist. Let me see if I can. There you go. And I'll change the mode into road mapping. Oh, that's a beautiful road map.
It looks kind of shitty from my end.
Yeah, I know. It looks horrible.
Yeah. I'm like, wait, what? Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, I guess.
Yes, sir. Okay. All right, that's that. That's a 7x40 Lutonix. Give me a little shot there.
Okay.
Lenny, always take the air out. There you go. There you go. So this is going to be a 7x40 Lutonix.
Mm-hmm.
And can you give me the numbers, guys, on the thing?
It's a 7 nominal.
There should be some numbers. Are you having them there?
No.
That's the wrong one. So look at the numbers and say, okay, so nominal is going to be actually 7, to your point. Burst is 10, but at that point we get to 7.3, so let's go to 9.
That's remember when you would give me all that crap about not knowing, about memorizing the numbers?
That was me, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's because I never knew them, so I needed somebody to know. All right, I'm at 7, y'all. That's nominal right there. It looks good. I'm happy, yeah. It's. And then also, if you push too much on these lesions, there's always a lining in the grafts that you can disrupt.
Yeah.
So try not to go too crazy, or you'll end up with some sort of weird dissection from that layering of cells that has in the limb.
All right, so you expect a beautiful completion angiogram after this. I know you're thinking about the next step after that, which is basically just closure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would just leave a wire. If it doesn't bleed, just don't do any closure.
Yeah, I think it's probably going to bleed because I bet you that I've probably done a little bit of a channel there.
Mm.
But what we do with grafts is kind of like an AB graft. You just put a nice big stitch in the skin and it'll probably close it. But maybe I could just do a Vascade, something like simple where I put a little collagen plug in if need be.
Mm, yeah.
Maybe just a little pressure to your point, right? So we need another few seconds here to let this drug ooze into this lesion.
Yeah. So this patient came in for rest pain.
Uh-huh. Correct.
You would be expecting the rest pain to resolve.
I would expect so, yeah. I mean, if you think about it, that this whole common femoral patch and profunda was contingent on flow from the limb, which was 95% stenosed. I mean, the catheter was barely had any lumen.
What was the, do you know the indication for the fempop?
For the same, it was for rest pain.
Hmm.
So I think that...
So maybe the rest pain won't go away.
No, I think it will because I think this thing has been there from the beginning. Is my...
Oh, okay.
That's like, right. Maybe they patched the femoral and did the bypass and there was never really good inflow because this device was there. This situation, not this device, this stenosis was there.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's slowly come out, Danny. Uh-huh. All right, let's leave it there. Let's do a quick image here. All right, let's see. Let me change to. That's
beautiful.
Nice.
That's way better. I get the 7 was a great idea.
But also, there's really great, much better flow into the native external iliac. You see it in the back? I couldn't see him before. Now you can even see the inferior epigastric. So let me get things out of
here. Can you describe? So we're seeing basically the limb, the area of stenosis is basically resolved, I would call it.
Correct.
Almost completely. I would say at least 80% resolved.
Yeah.
And then the patch wide open.
Let's look at this without zoom. I think this will be much more telling.
Yeah. Beautiful. Look at that.
Exactly. So now we have that proximal stenosis that was pretty tight, that's resolved. Yeah. We did plaque modulation, personalized based on the images from the IBIS. We then went on to predilate. There was a good response. Then post-dilate with a drug-coated balloon to affect some negative remodeling, potentially get the best out of the long-term results from this procedure. And I would be genuinely curious if she doesn't improve or potentially even cure completely this rest pain with this, right? I mean, this whole leg was contingent on a 95% stenosis.
Can you do some PATs?
Yeah, we do PAT. I will tell you that PAT doesn't necessarily change immediately when it's indirect.
Okay.
Usually we wait and we can do PATs in the recovery room.
Mm-hmm. So maybe we just
a little bit, and then you can probably find that there. Yeah, let me see what's happening here down below. Look at that.
Yeah.
So there's already much more flow. This was not very obvious at the beginning, and it's certainly not on the CT scan. And this was a below the knee fempop. So let's see what's happening here indirectly to that leg. Oh. See if she stays still. Comes back that AT, you see it?
Mm-hmm. But there's significant disease. So the
significant disease, yeah.
The P3.
You can see the AT coming in there, right? Yeah. Towards the bottom left hand of the screen.
Might be, yeah.
I think that's the one vessel that's going to the distal.
You might see a TP trunk too, right? Maybe? Below the AT?
Yeah. There's a TP trunk. Yeah. Let's see if I'm curious if we can get a whole lot distal here. I'm just going to inject, give it a little seconds, you know, kind of count one, two, three, and now let's see if, there you go. Yeah. Nice fat anterior tibial with a 2A Cowrata anatomy.
Explain this. Yeah. Explain the 2A.
Well, you know, there's the Cowrata anatomy of below the ankle disease. So a 1 means that the dorsalis pedis and the lateral plantar, meaning posterior tibial, are intact with a nice arch.
Mm-hmm.
2A, 2B means it's predominantly AT or predominantly PT. And then 3 means there's nothing, like a no option.
Mm-hmm.
In her case, I think she's a 2A. She's got predominance of the AT with a dorsalis pedis. I can move the C-arm and get toes, but I think that's beyond the point here. It's not a CLTI case with a wound or woundosome that we're chasing. I think here is, you know, we know that a surgery would be more complex. We'd probably be looking at a profunda to anterior tibial bypass.
Would you attempt endo salvage first?
I think so. I would consider, if she was continuously in trouble, I would consider getting retrograde access into the AT and then crossing back into the patch and then trying to balloon and, you know,
Why would you access your main outflow instead of accessing the TP trunk distal, which is not something...
Yeah, you could do that too, yeah. The AT is easily compressible. One can make an argument that you can, you know, get it all open that way.
Yeah.
Anywho, let's go ahead and try to close this things up, huh, and see what it looks like.
Okay.
I'm going to go back to the ultrasound now. AJ, if you don't mind, go back to the EVIS. And do you want to give me some gel there, Danny? Let's see what this looks like. And we can probably slowly just pull the sheath without necessarily putting a closure device and just see if the track is perfused, you know?
Yeah, just leave the 014 wire, see if it bleeds around it. If it's nothing or it's minimal, then just...
So do me a favor, AJ. Give me color. Let's see what this looks like on color. Okay.
Yeah, there's nothing there.
So I see the bypass is still occluded. You see where the color comes up to it?
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm going to do, I'm just going to pull back the sheath very slowly and see if there's some bleeding into that area.
Nada.
What do you think?
Nada.
I don't see much, huh? I'm just going to stop there.
Yeah.
I see the profunda patch. I see the profunda looks beautiful. The confemoral patch. But it seems like there's no blood going in here.
Mm-mm.
Let me go ahead and pull a little bit more. Right, we still have artery to go. Maybe there could be a little trickle flow there, you know.
That's a bypass, though.
This is a bypass, but I'm trying to see if there's any active flow that would make me a little concerned about this. I don't see
anything.
But you see where the track of the sheath was. You can see the track, so maybe that can bleed a little bit.
You have like 5 centimeters of occluded graft. Yeah, a clot. Yeah.
Well, let's do this. Let's go ahead and just slowly pull here under direct visualization. AJ, can you move the color up a little bit? The other thing I can do here is just open the sheath. Now, there's pulsatile flow in the sheath.
Oh, well, I guess I'm wrong.
So let's do this. Can I get a Vascade just so I can close this up with a Vascade, y'all? Give me a 6-French Vascade. Go back to camera.
Can we see the can you?
This is Danny.
Hello, Danny.
No, she's married. Don't even. And she doesn't need anybody in Mexico. Dr. Ferrer is obsessed with the food in Mexico.
It's great.
It is good, yeah. Okay, so let's go back to the EVIS. I'm going to go ahead and put a Vascade device in here.
Can you, Vascade like...
just a collagen.
Are you going to show the ultrasound deployment?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Can you, AJ... if you don't mind, take the color away, please. We'll see how easy this will go. go through. Like a lot of resistance for it to open, because I'm guessing that there's probably a lot of material in there. So the Danny, can you try to pull this for a second so I can see it? Yeah, so you see the thing is actually outside of the graft. So what I'm going to do is don't move that, I'm just going to deploy, let it go. I'm going to put the collagen right on top by doing this
on top of it. I mean, big U stitch would do exactly the same thing.
I'll just show you here. Yeah. And what I'll do here is I'll just hold a little pressure here because. Color there, AJ?
We had an episode with Kelt. I'm surprised that they convinced you to use
Kelt. Yeah, I should have done Kelt here. You should have reminded me. That I think would have been a great option here.
Yeah. I used it recently in a super, like I usually do.
We should have done Kelt. Why didn't you?
Didn't know you had it.
I do? Yeah, we do.
I love it.
I'm just holding pressure here. There's a little bit of a.
Yeah.
Extra rotation.
But I mean, this is going to clot off extremely quickly.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll just let the heparin here linger. Yeah. And then you can see how it's going nowhere. Yeah. I'm holding pressure right above the axis site.
Yeah.
I'll hold pressure here for about, probably about 10 minutes. And I bet you that we'll be able to just control this pretty fast.
Let's talk about debrief a little bit of the case. I think you made it look, and this is what was always very frustrating of doing cases with you made it look extremely easy. And once you'd done enough of these, you know that was a landmine. You know, not one landmine, like multiple landmines, like lining up together.
Hey, can we go back to the angio?
I was surprised, first of all, about the result with the laser. I think it gave you like more than 30% lumen gain, just eyeballing it. And then obviously the 7 dB was the right choice. It gave you that extra. I think I feel very comfortable with this, just, you know, that we'll get a long lasting result. And it looks beautiful. It's like very elegantly done.
Yeah, I think so. I think that the things here were, you know, consider your alternative access sites. An occluded bypass can be an interesting access site. That's an interesting teaching point. Now, why wouldn't we go, because this is Daniela's ask before, it's like, why don't you just poke the patch? Well, poking the patch is sometimes very complicated. If you've done enough of these and you've poked the patch enough times, you realize how sometimes it's like very hard. It's not that easy to just say poke the patch, right?
I actually had a patient that I poked the patch, I deployed a ProGlide. Because of all the scar tissue, the ProGlide did not deploy appropriately. He developed a pseudoaneurysm. And then I had to go revise the patch. Try to avoid poking the patch. And that was going anti-grade axis, you know. Retrograde up and over.
Is a great option for that. Now that obviously Monday morning quarterback, I think instead of the Kelt would have been an interesting option.
I think just pressure on a U stitch for this one. I feel like, you know, it's true.
Like, yeah. I don't see an expand-style hematoma over the, you see that subcutaneous tissue. It's controlled. There's still that little cul-de-sac, but you don't see anything outside of the vessel.
No. Yeah.
Well, I'm describing the ultrasound. I got you on the x-ray image, but yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, I appreciate you guys. We'll talk a little bit more when I get back to the studio, but I thought that was a cool case.
That was a great first case of the Life and Flow podcast. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, there'll be more coming. All right.
All right, buddy. I'll see you in a bit.
All right. See you in a bit. Bye.
All right, Lucas. Well, I hope people took some really good take-home messages. I thought that was well done, elegant, office-based, ambulatory, relatively simple and to the point. I think inflow here is the target before you overcomplicate yourself with a bunch of other or more morbid options. This patient's problem was rest pain, and probably all because that profundo was disconnected. And so I wanted, you mentioned the duplex, and I wanted to show a side-by-side comparison. The duplex on the left is the preoperative duplex. This is the, I always coin it, term it the gillograms. This is the kind of that we get from Ms. Somerset's educations through our texts. And so you could tell very well that this is essentially a CTA reconstruction showing the problem at the edge, at the top. They didn't give us the detail of the limb or the graft, but of course that's where the CTA complements the duplex. But you could tell that there's a 600 plus cm per second, which was clearly that highly stenotic area that we just treated. And another thing to note, if you look all the way down there, the velocity, the pedal acceleration time was up in the 232 milliseconds. That made it class 4. And look at what we're dealing with now. The patient came, by the way, relieved now. The top has no velocity disturbance. Probably 215, but in the setting of what we're dealing with is relatively normal with a high phasic waveform on the top. And then you see that the velocities are now 140 at the bottom, 150, and that makes it a class 2. Which he is more concerned of now is swelling, which is typical, right? You see this, somebody is very profoundly ischemic and you are able to bring him back some flow, then they always have this rebound swelling that can linger for 2-3 months.
Yeah, sometimes they complain more about that. They say, oh, you made me worse.
Yeah, they're so concerned about the swelling, but they're like, what happened to your rest pain? Oh, no,
that's fine. Yeah.
About the gangrene. No, that's fine.
That went away.
Now, like, I had to like buy another pair of Crocs. What the fuck? Who's going to cover that?
Yeah.
But anyway,
not Medicare.
So, Lucas, any closing thoughts here to let people go home and after our first case cast, and hopefully we'll get some feedback from them to see if this is something they want us to do more. But
I'm excited about this. I mean, I think the working out these problems for us real time and then bringing them as a podcast is fun and lots of possibilities. So I'm excited about it.
You know, I've been an advocate of like live cases throughout my career.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of it. But then what I like about this is more storytelling, right? I can show the beginning. I can show what we did technically. And then I can show the result, right? I can show an ultrasound. We can show images of wounds. And we can put together, because, this was a case that happened about 2 months ago. And it gives us enough time to be able to put it together for the audience to understand the beginning, the during, and then the aftermath. And I think that this is going to be probably even more valuable than a live case on a single short, very, very limited time frame. So,
you know what could be very interesting? Surgery is very regional. Imagine the differences when I noticed there was a notable difference between the Northeast and the South. It's how people do things, name things, things they use. Imagine like globally. So I think it'd be cool to invite people to do this with us.
Yeah.
And just have their opinion. Just invite people from like all we have people listening from like Saudi Arabia or something.
Yes.
So we're like, in Japan. So we could like invite people. So whoever wants to come and do one of this with us, just send us a message or something.
Yeah, and I would say in two ways, right? One way is if you have the capacity to do the live case, record it, and we can join you to see
what. That'd be cool. Yeah. We'd
love to do that.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
If and the opposite, you don't, but you want to chime in with us, shoot us a text or an email, and we'll have you as a guest so that the conversation can be even more enticing with different views. So,
well, maybe we can just log in if they have like video record, like if we could see their images and just we can comment on their case. That'd be cool.
Yeah. So either or, but I think there's a lot to this, and as we develop it, you're sitting on the first row. So yeah. I hope you enjoy our wins and losses here. But at the end of the day, we're trying to do something really special and unique for you to enjoy, to learn, and please share and comment and give us 5 stars because it really helps to get our.
There you go. You're becoming the second world's best moderator.
Well, we are the number one vascular podcast and case guest of the world. So, yeah, good it is. All right, y'all. Be well. Right. Take care. And we'll be in touch. Pura vida.
Two vascular surgeons walk into a bar and come out with a podcast. We are talking everything vascular and not. Welcome to the Life of Flow podcast.